Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So talk about a couple of crazy jam-packed shows. I'm still going from yesterday. Yesterday was amazing. We had these four incredible women, victims of breast implants that had various, you know, problems, diseases, illnesses, and near-death experiences. And we're going to see what we can do about legislation, particularly taking the vaccine liability bill that I wrote, which is going to apply directly to the vaccine manufacturers, and try and do the same thing with breast implants. So we're going to work on that. Today we've got a bunch of folks, but I think we got our time mixed up a little bit because I'm on Central Time and I think they're on Eastern Time. And I think one of my folks is calling in. I've already talked to one person, one of my guests. I've got my next, I'm wrong. This is the person who's supposed to call in. That's what happens. Sorry. I got my producer coming on soon. Really, I'm not going to keep making these silly little errors here. That's Gene on the line. Thank you, Gene. All right, there we go. So I'm just going to do a couple quick things here. I'm going to rearrange this, and that goes here. But anyway, no, I had one of my guests call in a bit early, and so I'm going to – we got that all fixed up too. But again, busy, busy, busy day. We've got the folks from Convention of States, and they're going to be joining us in the second hour today, and that's going to be absolutely wonderful. I'm typing and writing at the same time. It sounds like I'm multitasking. I am, okay? So hopefully I don't say something really stupid. But this is going to be fun too. Now tomorrow we've got our Concerned Veterans for America as well. So the weeks are getting more crowded, and there are many things happening, and things happening behind the scenes that are incredibly exciting. And as soon as I can tell you, I promise I will. But for today, like I say, we've got Gene Vernig, our life coach. We've got Josie, who's going to be doing our Central South American South of the Border report. And then we've got the Convention of States folks. So just hang on, and away we go. But in the meantime, I think it's time we mellowed out a little bit, got in touch with our inner feelings, channeled our crystals, burned our incense, and got the Life Coach Report with Gene Vernig. In these times of trial and tribulation, of epidemic and or economic crisis, of personal challenge and societal collapse, there is one place you can retreat, recharge, and re-energize to take on the world. That place is the Life Coach Report with Gene Vernig, here on Action Radio. What better way to start your day?
Yeah, I think, Gene, I'm suffering from the there's always one more thing to look up before the show phase. It's never completely done, but I have to start talking anyway because it's time. So there's got to be a word for that in life coachdom. You know, you're never quite done. There's always one more thing. Wait a minute, I'm ready to start the show. One more thing. And of course, I don't have time for one more thing because it's 7 o'clock, and it's time to get rolling here. But that's my current dilemma for my life coach.
Good morning. Well, that can be a good thing that you always have things to do, for the fact that at least you're still doing things.
Well, that's for sure.
And
I don't feel like I'm done
but then the thing is, if you get everything done. Mm-hmm. What happens? We're really not living, because can't even say we're existing, because we always have to have a goal. We have to have something to work forward to, mm-hmm. or work towards, just thing to learn and stuff like that, because we don't want to stay stagnant as a person, or you really don't want to, because
nope.
Then you're not becoming the best person you can be. You just are what you are at that moment, or actually it's almost like what you were in the past, because you are not advancing. And not that you have to advance to make more money or to get a better title, but no, knowledge is a good thing, or not even that, but more self-aware. So it's like maybe you're not learning more what's going on in politics or whatever for some of these, you know, your listeners, but what it is, it's maybe you're learning more just to be with what is versus you know, reacting and stuff like that. And so today I want to talk to you about, oh gosh, so many times I talk to people about, you know, staying in high vibration and how important it is to stay in a high vibration, because it really is important to manifest things. And also it's so much, it's such a much better place to be than in dark energy or depressed or down. And I don't want to knock people that are depressed, because I mean, life happens, you know, we all get chopped down at the knees at times. And if things happen, or as things are happening to you, the thing people want to do is just acknowledge what's happening. Just pay attention to what's happening. What are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? And then also be all right with getting upset. Be all right with being afraid. Be all right with something that may be a lower vibration. You know, experience what you're experiencing or feel what you're experiencing, but don't stay there. And let me give you an example. It's so easy. Like, let's say you lost a job, or you broke up with someone or something like that. Okay, how do you feel? You may feel.
Well, it depends. I might be pretty happy breaking up. So that's the best example.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can be, hallelujah, yeah. But for the most part, people, you know, if you lose a job, it can be very traumatic. And right away, what do we think? It's like, oh, what are the neighbors going to think? What's my family going to think? You know, it's always about, or not always, but a lot of times it's what other people are going to think, or, you know, just we feel bad. But
where's my next
paycheck
coming from?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a huge thing. But the thing is, what I want people to get is sometimes the universe makes things happen because it sends us clues or little nudges and we ignore them. And then, boom, something like that happens and it makes us take stock. But the thing is, that's another whole tangent on itself. But I want to get into, what are you feeling when that happens? Okay, feel that. Really feel that. But don't stay stuck there. After you feel that, you know, and if you need to tell yourself, okay, you got 5 minutes, you got a half hour to feel what you're feeling, just let it out, cry, scream, be mad, whatever. But then it's like, then you need to take stock and you need to, I don't want to say man up, but basically what you need to do is say, okay, this is what happened. Now, what am I going to do about it? Where do I go from here? And then start becoming the victor and not stay in victimhood.
You know, it's interesting. As we're talking here, we should do a title for a segment, The Virtue of Depression. And people are like, what are you talking about, man? Nothing good comes from depression. You gotta medicate, man. You avoid it. You know, you just go talk to people, do stuff. And it's like, well, you know, I hate to say this, but without depression, there'd be no Action Radio. There would have been none of that huge amount of work that I had to do, that whole burden that I was putting on myself. And I purposely avoided drugs and I avoided all kinds of stuff. I said, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to work my way through it. And it was one of the toughest struggles I've ever had, and also one of the most rewarding. There's always the flip side, you know, crisis opportunity. These things happen. And without the work that I did, it could have, you know, dominated the rest of my life. And I think that's one of the biggest problems is that people, when faced with adversity, you have to, there's a reason for the adversity. You know, I used to say, and I still do sometimes, that when someone says to me, everything happens for a reason, you know, they better damn well know the reason. Okay. Otherwise I don't want to deal with it, you know, but when you think about it, they're really challenging times. It's the tough teacher that made you learn more. It's the crazy situation that you remember. You don't remember the nice sunny days when things go well. You remember when you got caught out in the pouring rain. And crisis plus time equals humor. At least I hope so. But there is virtue in struggle. There is virtue in depression. There's virtue. There's a reason depression exists. For example, it's your body telling you, I'm going to shut you down until you deal with this. Okay. And if you avoid that, you're missing an essential step in your life. And you know, your life is made up of good things and bad things. And if you miss an essential step, you never get past it. And so
exactly.
if you're going to be depressed, be depressed. It's okay. But realize there's work to be done. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. But the thing is, I know a lot of people who are depressed right away, instead of dealing with their depression, they go to the medication route. And so what does medication do? It doesn't make you deal with what caused you the depression. You may be laminating it, keep going over it and over it and over it in your mind, but it does you no good because you never get past that. And this is just what my experience is. But yes, people, you know, feel what you're feeling. And even if you're depressed, it's like, and this is the hardest thing to do when you're depressed. And I know because I've experienced it. And I'm not going to get into that because that was very dark days in my life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The thing is, though,
one big depression's enough.
Just to get up and do something.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you have to force yourself to do something. Mm-hmm. And also, one thing so interesting, so many people say, what do you want to be? Oh, I want to be happy. You know what? Happiness is an inside thing, and happiness is a choice.
Yep.
We all have the choice whether we can be happy or we can be sad. And you know what? I mean, if you knew some of the stuff that's going on in my life right now, you'd be like, holy crap. But the thing is, I am not unhappy. It's like, no, I'm not, because I know happiness is a choice. And I can either say, oh, it's a beautiful day out, and it may be storming, cold, just not so nice, but there's something nice with this day that it makes it beautiful. And so we have the choice. Are we going to sit there and look at the negative thing, or are we going to find, even if it's just one positive thing out of an experience, think of that positive thing. And as I said, not that you want to cover up what you're feeling. You do want to feel what you're feeling, but you don't want to stay there. And I think so many times it's so easy for us to get stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
But also what I want to tell people is don't spend that makes you happy or be the person that makes you upset or sad. Because you know what? Then you're giving all your power to them. And that is not right. And the thing is, we all make mistakes. And regardless what those mistakes are, all you can do as a person is forgive yourself and try harder next time. Now, are you going to make the same mistake again? You may. We're human. And the thing is, if you allow other people to dictate how that makes you feel and if you're worthy or a good person or not, then we need to talk again, because do not allow other people to make you feel a certain way. And even if you fall down 100 times about the same thing, you know what? It made that 101st time that it finally clicked and you're finally able to do what you've been trying to do and you just haven't been able to do up to that point. But do not give your power away. And do not allow other people to dictate how you feel about yourself and whether or not you think you're a good person or not.
You know, it's interesting you should say that. I think so many times there's pressure on people to have a relationship, and if they just have somebody else special in their life will be special and that's all they need. And they still haven't worked on themselves and they haven't, you know, fixed the things that they want to fix in themselves. And they think that some other person is going to do that for you. And it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to be happy in yourself first, and then you may choose to have a relationship or not, but at least you're doing it on the basis of honesty as opposed to a false thing. Like when other people say, well, you'd be happier if you had this or you know, it's like trying to live by what you think other people think you should do. It's a constant second guessing without the evidence of what that other thing is. And other people are really stupid too. They'll tell you too. Well, you know, you don't have, you know, if you had a better job, you wouldn't be so miserable. Or if you had this, you know, then the envy comes in. Gee, if I just, you know, could do this thing, whatever it is, I'd be happy. And it isn't, you know, it is. It's completely intrinsic. You know, I'm dirt poor,
right,
struggling with something that's never been done before, and I've never been happier.
Right.
My life is great.
Yeah. The thing is, though, too, what gets me is people that, and I've experienced this quite a few times recently. People, person tells me, oh, I know you better than you know yourself. Heck no, you don't. You may think you do, and your ego may be telling you that, but you don't know me better than I know me. None of us none of us, I hope nobody ever gets put in that situation where you're told, oh, I know you better than you know yourself. No, you know why? Because you're the only one that knows how you're feeling at any given moment, and you're the only one that can figure out why you're feeling a certain way. And sometimes you really have to dig to find out why you are feeling like that or why something mm-hmm. triggers that in you. But only we ourselves know that. And the saddest thing is you talk about a relationship. The saddest thing is being in a relationship when someone tells you, well, I just don't want to be alone, so I'd just rather be with you than alone. And you know what? Don't stay in that relationship because you deserve better. You deserve better. And so I want people to really look, take stock of things. And I know it's hard because, you know, so many people, and we're not like that anymore. But in my time, you know, the divorce and stuff, a lot of times people are just like, well, you get married, you pick that person, that's who you're supposed to be with. No, if it makes you miserable, if that other person is miserable, and the thing is, even if you're happy in the relationship, if that other person is miserable, why do you want to be in it? Why don't you want, sometimes it's hard. Breaking up is very hard. But the thing is, you don't know what's around the corner for either of you. And it's like life is too short. Life is to be lived. Life is to be enjoyed. Life is to be experienced. Life isn't to be dictated to from other people because they think they know you better or, you know, just experience and not experiences, but situations. Because remember, any situation can turn around in the next second or change in the next second. You know, for those of you that think, wow, life is good, and then boom, all of a sudden something happens that throws a monkey wrench into things. And so what happens then? Okay, if you've had good, everything's been good up till this point, and something happens that you've never had experience before, meaning something that doesn't go your way, then what? Then all of a sudden,
oh, I got experience in
life
that.
Life is over. My life is ruined. I'm no good. This is never going to change. But it can. It can change in your next breath. One, based on how you change what you're feeling, because there's always something to be grateful for. I don't care if you're on your deathbed. There's always something to be grateful for. And
I got a
we
question
have
for you,
that
though.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead. Since you're finished, yeah.
You
all right. No. Well, here's something I was thinking of, especially in my own life, and I figure that if it happens to me, it's probably affecting at least one other person on the planet. Are there folks that are either genetically or emotionally, you know, predisposed to not be as happy or successful in life in a relationship? Because I know with me, I'm happiest on my own. And people are like, well, you know, once you find the right person, Greg, you're going to be all set. And then that right woman's going to make your life, and you're just going to be great. It's like, you know, I'm doing pretty well okay now. I'm happy. My life's under control. I make my own decisions. No one's, you know, screwing around with my life and causing me a bunch of grief and stress that I don't need. So, but I wonder if I'm the only one. Well, I can't be the only one, but has any study been done on this? Has anybody really looked into being predisposed to be single and independent and happy? Because I'm really single, really independent, and really happy.
Well, there are some, I mean, if you look at people in general, some people just never want to get married. Some people don't want to be in a relationship, you know, what we would consider is a typical relationship, put it that way. But the thing is with that, too, when people say, oh, you meet that person and your life is going to be so much better, it's like...
I was asking how.
The thing is sometimes I think if you bring out the best in each other and encourage each other to be better people, that's one thing. But the thing is you never, ever want to base your happiness or how you are on another person. And that's what a lot of people, I think, in relationships do. They just say, oh, well, you know, I'm female. I'm with I'm married. Oh, my life is going to be great. Or even if I'm not married, I'm in this committed relationship. My life is going to be great. You know what? You can be in a committed relationship and your life could stink as far as relationships go because it's not the right relationship. And so never, ever think that someone else is going to bring you joy or it's going to be so much better. Yes, it may be better, one, because you have someone to go home to at night. You have someone to look forward to seeing. But as far as anything else, it's like, don't ever give your energy away and say that, oh, once I'm married, my life is going to be so much better or whatever, because you get, and as a female, and now thank God, it's like we don't have to rely, so we don't have to rely on others for, you know, to support us. But the thing is with that, some people think, oh, well, I married this person, rich person, and my life is going to be taken care of. And I, you know, I have all this lovely things. You know what? I know a lot of people that have a lot of money and are not mm-hmm. happy either. Money mm-hmm. does not buy happiness. Money can take some other stresses off you, and it can give you a lovely house, can give you more than one house, whatever, but or a very fancy car. But it's like, at the end of the day, if that really makes you happy, okay. But if it does,
yeah, it does actually.
And it's like, yeah. And,
not the house, but the cars. Yeah,
old,
yeah.
Yeah. But just, yeah, it's just sad that, yeah, people think, ooh, the Prince Charming is coming and you're going to live happily ever after. It's like, you know, we all have positive and negative things. You know, we are all flawed in certain ways, but different ways. And that doesn't make us as bad as a person. You know, I think our flaws are things that we have, are just things we have to work on if we choose to work on them. And that's how it is. But, yeah, don't let other people dictate how you're feeling. Don't let other people make you believe that they know you better than you do. And don't make other people take your joy and your laughter, because then you're not really living either. You're just existing, and sometimes barely existing.
Yeah. I'm always worried about the folks that will say that, you know, I need something or other in my life, which I don't particularly think I need, you know, like a dog. People say, well, you've got to get a dog, Greg. Why? Well, because then you'll have a dog to pet, and, you know, and it'll love you and lick your hand. I was like, yeah, and then I have to walk it, feed it. It's here all the time, you know, and I don't have time or space for it. And I'm gone for many multiple hours at a time. Why would I need one? Because they would feel better, because they have a dog and they have to walk it and they have to feed it. You know, and same thing goes for relationships. You know, the people that seem to be the most wanting me to do it, you know, generally have not the best relationships themselves a lot of times. And it's fascinating that it's almost like and they'll have all these good reasons for me, or they'll think they'll say, you know, your life will be so much better in a relationship. I'm like, well, really? How? Well, you'll have a person in your life. Okay, well, I have a lot of people in my life. Well, you have someone to talk to. Well, I have a lot of people to talk to. I'm a radio talk show host. I can't help talk to people. You know, it's just, you know, what more do you, well, they'll be there. Well, yeah, taking up space and then have to walk around and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, what is this big mystery? Why is everybody else so concerned? You know, and here's where I guess it gets into projection. In other words, if people think that their life should be everybody's life, I don't expect anybody to live my life. Hell, I'm having enough trouble doing it. You know, why would anybody else? I wouldn't project my life on anybody else. But although it is kind of an adventure, and I'm making my own choices, and I'm fully responsible for them. But the thing is, it's like other people want to make choices for you so they will feel better. And I'm not sure if that's a projection thing or what's going on there. Got any insight for me?
Well, also misery likes company. You know,
well,
if someone
true.
Is someone, if I mean, how many times have you been somewhere and you listen to people talk and someone says something that happens to them, though it may not be the most positive. And then another person tries to up that on mm-hmm. something negative that happened to them. And then all of a sudden the whole conversation is so negative and you're just like, my gosh, it's really sad that, and I've seen it happen so many times. Why don't we change things around and find out something positive that's going on in your life and say, hey, you know, I went to the grocery store today and they were passing out free cupcakes and I got a cupcake. I mean, whatever. It can be something very simple. It doesn't have to be, oh, I was, you know, walking downtown and I found a $1,000 bill. That, you know, that'd be nice too. But, you know, it's like,
it would be nice.
Just, you know, look at the, when you're talking about things, watch what you're saying. It's so hard to be around people that all the time when they open their mouth, that's all they pretty much talk about is the negative thing that went on in their day. You can't tell me you can't find something, one positive thing that went on that day. And to live in this country, and if it's hot out and you have air conditioning, that's a positive thing. Or if it's cold and you have heat, that's a positive thing. Or if you have to get to work and you have to drive and you have a reliable car, I don't care if it's 30 years old. I don't care if it's barely running. If you got to work safely, that is a positive thing, because some people, unfortunately, this day are not going to get home because they died in an accident. You know, so it's like, what is something you can be positive about? And watch the conversations you have. Are they more positive, more uplifting, more enlightening, or are they more discouraging? You know, are they more empowering? And sometimes, yes, you need to say, you may need to say, like, tell the story. So it may start out with something that was negative to show the empowerment, or to say something negative, but to how that changed your day, how that changed your life, how that changed your moment, or what you did to change things. Yeah.
We got a caller. We got a call I want to take. And it's a new number, new person, 716 area code. So if you want to give your first name and where you're calling from, welcome to our Life Coach Report with Gene Vernig. And I'm Greg Penglis, and this is Action Radio.
I was actually just sitting here listening, but.
Okay, you can do that. Yeah. Generally, we find that, especially as the show gets more and more popular, that I try to encourage folks to listen online, on your computer, on your cell phone, you know, if you're driving, you know, connect your cell phone to your vehicle audio at the blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction site. Because when this show hits big and we get a million listeners, there's going to be no way you're going to be calling. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a bit a lot tougher. Did you want to comment or do you want me to put you back on mute and you can just listen? What would you like to do?
Put me back on mute if you could.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. See what you think. Join us anytime you want. Good to have you here. Here we go. So I'll call her on mute. I'll check back with them if they're still on in several minutes as we get to our next report. But yeah, we got a few minutes left for you. So where do we go from here? This is fascinating. Is there more you want to talk about, Gene?
Yeah, that's it as far as just allow yourself to feel. And you know, as you said, I spend so much time trying to keep, you know, tell people you need to stay in the high vibration. However, we need to experience what we're experiencing. And, you know, if something frustrates you, don't just smile and just say, well, that's all right. Just keep doing it. No, speak up, you know, because so many times I think, oh, my God. And this is because I'm female, Greg, so I have to apologize. But I'm not.
Are you female?
I'm not even apologize.
Nobody tells me
but
anything.
I can't tell you how many times if I have an opinion
right.
about something and – Correct it. I've got a lot of opinions. But
that's why you're on the show.
And I voice it. You know, I'm considered a bitch. But a guy can voice their opinion, and it's okay. And it's like, why can't we just all be able to voice our opinion? Now, I'm not saying that after I voice my opinion and someone has an opposite opinion, I'm not going to call them a jerk or not want to hear what they have to say. No. Mm-hmm. But I think we all have a right to be able to speak our truth, speak what we want to speak. You know, but when I say that, but when you do speak it, come from a loving heart. And do I do that all the time? No, no. But as I said, we're human.
That's because you're female.
You know, I have to say, though, and you talk about relationships, and I've had this conversation numerous times recently. Sometimes in relationships, we are not good for each other because we bring out the worst in each other. And why do you want to be in a relationship where you're bringing out the worst in each other? You know, that's not a relationship that's healthy, you know? And so it's like, just please everybody. And you could say, well, and for a while I was like, well, you know, sometimes we're in that relationship to help us grow. And that's true. But the thing is, at the end of the day, it's like you're not doing either person is not doing the other person a service because it's there's got to be more. And why do you hold on to something that is not peaceful? It's
I know. I've got an idea for you.
Crazy
conditioning.
It's crazy, yeah.
No, here's what happens when you're a kid. You do what you want, and we're happiest as kids because we do what we want. We don't know what the limitations are. We don't know what the social rules are. We don't know the expectations we're supposed to have. You know, we don't know any of that stuff. So we just do what feels good. It's like, you know, running on grass and bare feet feels good. So we do it. We don't know that we're in public in a park and there's signs that say keep off the grass. We don't care. We're 4 years old. That's fun. Okay. So so if you can keep that. But still have adult responsibility. So in other words, you bring with you, which I try to do, you know, my childlike enthusiasm to literally everything. And don't be so conditioned. If you're conditioned to believe that you can only be happy in a relationship, you're always going to have a relationship no matter how miserable it is, because you're conditioned to believe that you'll be even more miserable without it, even though there's no evidence to back that up. So there's a lot of what I want to talk about as weeks go on. Yeah, go ahead. Let's deal with that first. What do you think?
First of all, you bring up such an excellent point. That's a big thing with all of us. It's mm-hmm. like we need to act like a child as far as the curiosity, the excitement. I think as adults, as we get older, we tend to lose that. And that is so sad because a child, so something happens to them. Okay, that maybe wasn't that nice. They're over it in a matter of moments. You know, they mm-hmm. don't sit there and go over it and over it and over it in their head. No, they're done. They're moved on. And so yeah. I think with adults, we need to really capture our childish essence and really live through the eyes of a child and think, what would my inner child want? What, and also take time for the inner child. And if the inner child says something like, I want an ice cream cone, you go get that inner child an ice cream cone and don't feel guilty about it. But, yeah, laugh like a child. I think that's such a big important thing is laughter. And so many of us do not laugh, especially now. It's like,
we're doing this show.
Oh, my God. The last time lots of people have laughed. Yeah. That's good because laughter is needed. And laughter, oh, my God, it mm-hmm. is just, yeah, makes
well, here's
really
something.
Does change any moment.
Yeah. Here's a thought I had, too, for it's probably for next week sometime. But there's a conflict not only between our social conditioning, but also our information conditioning. And this is something I think we need to – that's really affecting the country right now. Obviously, we can't do it justice now. But there's a huge disconnect. There, we were told that there was this massive pandemic, you know, when I believe we could have gotten over it in 8 to 10 weeks, like most pandemics, you know, you get herd immunity, it goes away. But this time we locked down and masked up and did all these stupid things. And Dr. Fascist is, you know, still changing the goalposts, as they say. He keeps saying, well, even though you're vaccinated twice, you still have to wear masks and we still have to social distance. That's a crock of nonsense. So there's a disconnect. The disconnect is that people who are getting vaccinated are still getting infected with COVID. That shouldn't happen. People who are not being vaccinated, like me, because I choose not to, you know, are being demonized. And on St. Vincent, for example, the prime minister said, we're only evacuating the people who got vaccinated. Well, who's he to play God? So there's a massive disconnect between, you know, the government's here, you know, not to help you, but at least, you know, protect you and keep you safe. And then they close down everybody's businesses and families, you know, millions of families have gone broke this year. You know, so
right.
I think there's the disconnect is between what you expect. You expect that the public health people are actually interested in public health rather than what I think they're doing is selling vaccines. I think they're nothing but used car salesmen for big pharma, you know, especially Dr. Fascist and the whole NIH, CDC, FDA crew. That's what they do. And more people are coming out saying, well, gee, I guess they are. So the disillusionment, you know, between what you expect. Now, I don't expect, you know, the government to help us like they say, you know, we're from the government, we're here to help you. But I do expect that they will follow the laws. And if there is some real evidence out there, let's see it. But I don't think they're doing that. I think that they've lied to this entire country, you know, for the last, what, year and a half going on about this whole COVID situation. And people who believed in public health and believed that they should quarantine when they were perfectly healthy and believed that they should wear masks when they had absolutely no symptoms of everything. All of a sudden, there's this huge, you know, revelation that we've been lied to big time and there's no reason for it. And so I think there's a lot of anger out there. And I'd be interested to know what you think, you know, for as long as you can stay today. But next week, I think it might be interesting if you jot this down sometime. Let's talk about the disconnect. Let's talk about all the lies that are coming out. People are going, well, wait a minute. You mean I lost my business for nothing? This, I think, is going to be a huge emotional problem affecting millions of people in this country. What do you think?
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, I had a conversation last night about Dr. Fauci, and the other person totally disagrees with me. But I said... He's double dipping. I mean, look how much money he makes doing his day job, but he's also involved with the pharmaceuticals, which is, should be a no-no right off the bat. But also, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. Oh, we're supposed to wear a mask, but then after he's done talking or whatever, what happens? They take photo of him, no mask. You know, and so also, he's not in the trenches. He has no clue. He's sitting behind a desk or behind a camera, you know, and I know at first they maybe didn't know. So they had, you know, they said one thing and then they said something else. But you know what? If you're an authority figure, you should be doing what's best for the people in that given situation versus looking more out for your pocketbook and your inflamed ego or whatever the case may be. But yeah, it's just very interesting. And the thing is, when you talk about kids not being able to go back to school, and I know a lot of schools now are starting to open up, But interesting, they're not allowed to go back to school because of COVID. But look at how many of those children, we talked about this last week or the week before, down at the border where they're over capacity. None of them are wearing masks.
Yeah.
So what's
well, there's
going
a disconnect.
On there?
That's,
they're okay.
That's a perfect disconnect.
And,
yeah.
Right. And Kamala Harris, oh, you need to get kids out of cages. Oh, yeah. And you're supposed to be the one that Biden put in charge of the border. And have you been down there yet? And what are you doing about it? Nothing. Nothing. I'm just so amazed. It's easy to talk. It's harder to do. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, but the pandemic, I think there's going to, unfortunately, which is really sad, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out that's going to be totally different than what we were told and led to mm-hmm. believe. But hindsight is always
not on this show.
So I
well,
get that.
You
yeah.
do know that we talked about, and you can say Dr. Fascist. I kind of like the ring of that. For my new caller who's listening in, that would be Dr. Anthony Fauci, who we affectionately call, or not so affectionately call, Dr. Fascist, because he's the most hard, evil little man on the planet right now and is responsible for the deaths of probably 500,000 people by denying drugs like hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate,
exactly.
ivermectin, vitamin D. I mean, the man's a genocidal killer. I mean, I'll say it right out there. And he doesn't care because he's a used salesman for pharma, big pharma. Yeah, go ahead. And I got Josie's here, too.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, the very sad thing is the doctors that spoke out about it, they were basically blasted and made mm-hmm. to feel, or told, made others were made to feel that they're incompetent. There's a doctor in Minnesota, I forget his name, he's running for, God, what is he running for, Senate? He's running
okay.
for office. I can't even remember. And I
yeah, look him up.
Him
present it next week. Yeah.
And he's been like reported to the state board for putting false information out on videos about the coronavirus and all this stuff. And someone reported him, or someone reported
him. Is it David Martin?
January.
Is it David
no,
Martin by chance? Okay, all right.
No. I think his first name is Steve. I can't remember. I just was listening to him yesterday again. Okay. And it was so interesting because he got another letter from the state of Minnesota, or not the state, the could be the medical board, saying that, you know, they looked into it and they found the claims to be not warranted or whatever. But the bottom line is this. He has no idea who reported them. He said it could possibly even be someone he's never treated, obviously, because it's like, just what, because they don't agree with what he says. But I think there's a lot of truth to what he says, because it's different than what mainstream media wants you to believe, that's for sure. But the bottom line is this, it too, and he's a medical professional, and you can say, well, this medical professional says something else. It's just like the mm-hmm. vaccine. You know, so many people are up in arms. Should I get it? Should I not? Well, the doctor said I needed to get it. Then other people are like, I'm not getting it, whatever. I mean, I think it's a personal choice. Nobody should mandate it. But the thing is with that, it's like these doctors, it's like you shouldn't, I mean, when I could see if they're doing something to harm their patients, and you could say, well, what he's saying isn't true, whatever. But
well, they said hydroxychloroquine will kill you. You know, and here's the problem. I'm going to make Josie's line live so she can jump in here in a second, too, with this, and we'll get into her report. But think about this, that you know, they talk about the science. Well, it's really not the science. It's the government-approved science and everything else. It's not the medical treatment from the experts. It's the government doctor's expertise, and everybody else is wrong. And that's a bunch of nonsense. So the government's killing hundreds of thousands of people based on erroneous information supported by a corrupt media and an equally corrupt big pharma funding and buying basically Congress and probably buying the media too. And so you've got all
right.
this stuff going on, and people are finding a hard time finding the truth. And all of a sudden they're getting, you know, if the science is so good, why are so many people dying and so many people recovering from the doctors that they're outlawing? You know, that's a disconnect.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah.
Yeah. Josie, you want to get on this?
The whole thing is very sad. Greg, I'm going to have to
hey,
you. I'm going to talk to you next week. Bye.
Okay. Bye, Jean. Yeah, I want to get her to see if you guys have any things together. Jean's great.
It's okay.
We love our conversations. Though. Yeah, yeah. So do you have anything further on Dr. Fascist? I know the goalposts are changing, and
well,
he keeps changing
course.
His mind.
I always
yeah.
do. The new thing is they're bringing more supposedly sick people in Michigan, where my daughter lives. So they're claiming all the hospitals are packed again and everything. And it's not true. It's a lie.
She can post videos to my page.
They're just trying to scare people so people can get the stupid vaccine. That's exactly what's happening.
You know, there's a lot of people looking into this, and I want your opinion on this, because so many folks I see, I mean, these are experts, these are journalists, these are, you know, really good conservative activists, journalists, and they're all looking at this, I think, the wrong way. You know, they're all saying, what's the origin of the COVID virus? And I keep telling people, I'm going to talk to someone else today. Actually, I might as well mention it. I was listening to the William Barry Show, which is which is really good. And he had Steve Deese on, who reports for the Blaze. He does a radio show on the Blaze after Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
And he had a really great report talking about the origins of the virus. I think everybody's missing the point. The virus was created to match the vaccine. The vaccine was not created to match the virus. The vaccine came first.
You're absolutely right.
And if you look at it in terms of the vaccine coming first, everything makes sense. The changing of the guidelines, the demonization of hydroxychloroquine, the media coordination that was done at Event 201, you know, the lockdowns, the masks, the perpetuation of this, everything is geared towards selling vaccines and eliminating everything else. You eliminate hydroxychloroquine, you eliminate ivermectin, you don't talk about vitamin D, you don't talk about zinc, you don't talk about any of these things. All these things are wrong because we have the science. So we're going to block everything else out, and you know, and it all leads to selling vaccines. I can't escape this.
Exactly.
It's driving me crazy. But yeah, what do you think?
You're absolutely correct. Because George Soros was in Wuhan Lab September 2019 to invest tons of money in other Democrats. They invested money on the infectious disease, they call it. And they very heavy.
I'd love to see some sources on that.
China.
That's a month before Event 201, which was October of 2019. I want to add that to my timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got some information that I can put on there, I've got this huge timeline of all these different events. Yeah, yeah, great. That'd
I
be excellent.
I have it, yeah.
Okay. So
now they're bringing, because there's no flu anymore, you know, like we get it every year. Now they're blaming COVID for everything. So
right. It's
very sad, but you're right on the money with all of this.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. So let's find out
they've been trying to push these vaccines since 2002. They started making it, and they've been trying. And Bill Gates, it's in it now. So, you know, so there's something in it for him. He's not happy to have so much money already. He wants more.
Well, here's what's interesting, too. A lot of countries in the world, I don't know what's going on in South America, for example, or Central America, but in Africa, the countries, everybody's taking, you know, chloroquine, you know, as a preventive for malaria. They're not getting COVID. You know, so are these like the Bill Gates who want to, you know, depopulate half the world? They're obviously not working in Africa as much. I mean, they were working in India, but I think India is on chloroquine too for malaria, and they're not getting sick as much. You know, so how about South America or Central America? Are there a lot of countries there that are taking, especially around the equator, that are taking chloroquine as a preventive and are not getting COVID? Preventive from malaria, that is.
What I know of Peru, because I have a lot of friends there. You cannot get it. They have taken it off the pharmacy. You have to kind of like buy it in the black market right
and
now.
You don't know how good it is then. That's the problem.
It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
how about the COVID rate in Peru? Is it higher because they don't have chloroquine as a preventive for malaria? I'm just curious.
It's very low. Very
low
with COVID.
Huh.
So it's in Colombia. In Colombia, because I was talking to Colombia yesterday.
Okay.
Marisol is still there, my friend, and she said, but a lot of businesses are still on lockdown. They're panicking people so they can take the vaccine also. So that's the thing. And they all are working with George Soros and Obama and the radical left government of ours.
So
yeah,
why would the radical
with George Soros.
Why would the radical left want to cut the world population in half? Don't they want their slave labor force? Don't they want their peasants? Don't they want their subservient minions? There's something missing here. There's something we're not getting.
Well, they're following China's footsteps, because remember, China, you're only allowed to have two kids because they don't want more kids.
Used to
and
be one.
The thing started with China cutting down on the population.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want girls. They really want boys. And it is so stupid and crazy because they want them to work and work and work. But I don't know. It's just,
do you know how violent?
Stupid.
You know, they got to really keep down that population, because if you get a surplus of men, look, I was in a fraternity. I know it's like they have two men around. Men don't like to be around that many men. No, seriously. I mean, we are designed to be. I mean, there's a reason there's a lot of women involved in the show. I like having, you know, women involved in the show, you know, and so, you know, it's just so I don't, you know, I don't discriminate on the basis of you know, it's your expertise, whatever your expertise is. I don't care who you are, but it doesn't make sense to me. To like what China's doing with their population, if they all want men because they want boys because they want heirs to their family, but the problem is they've got a surplus of men, you know, and without women to kind of moderate the guys, you know, just as if I wouldn't want to see a society dominated by women, because, you know, we're kind of good for each other, despite my relationship chat with Gene in the first half hour. But there's got to be a problem. They've got to, you know, they've got to keep those guys down with a communist dictatorship so they don't go wild and undisciplined and start gangs in the streets.
And
where are the women?
And you know, Greg, what China is doing, they're buying a lot of property in Colombia. They're buying property everywhere. Okay. They want to take over the world. That's their agenda. But let me know when you wanted me to do my report.
We better start because we have guests in the next hour. So I'll give you we got 14 minutes for what's going on the border. Yeah.
Okay. So the Mexican officials are admitting that Trump policies really help at the border, which we already know about that, of course.
Yep.
And there's about nine different organizations that they're making millions of dollars. But the main two ones bringing refugees to our country, it's the Lutheran and the Catholic Charities. They're bringing all the refugees on our side. And mysteriously right now, the Biden gang has kind of like stopped the refugee asylum policy, you know, like because they have a crisis in their hand. It's out of control right at the moment at the border, with open border, wide open
border.
But
we knew it was going to be out of control. They knew it was going to be out of control.
They're not processing political asylum. They're kind of like on hold right now. They're just letting them in. So, millions of people will come. They're arriving more and more and more from all over the world. It is insane. It is out of control. And one of the Catholic charity, a bishop is involved. And like I said, the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service are the one. And during Obama's time, there was and right now she's added again, Sister Norma Pimentel. She's like an executive director of the Catholic Charity. It's it's a disgrace what these churches are doing. She's from the Rio Grande Valley. Cardinal, his name is Blaise J. Kupich. He's from Chicago. And they're working together, admitting all these people at the border of McAllen, you know.
So how are they doing that?
20,000. Yeah.
How are these church groups? Because they have to. I mean, we've got Border Patrol. We've got facilities down there. McAllen, Texas, is one of the biggest border checkpoints.
Well, most of our Border Patrol, not all of them, are Mexicans. Because I've been in McAllen before when my sister got arrested. Remember when she got raped with a coyote and all that stuff? But right now, more than 20,000. Children and teenagers are in custody of our government system, you know. So more than 103% of capacity, they're like overwhelming the shelter. They have about 17,000 children in shelters, and the rest they have them in different areas, and they're distributing to different areas. That's why I see on I-10 buses coming from Texas every day right now.
Do you know where in Florida they're going? Are they going to the liberal areas of Florida, where like Broward County?
A lot of them are probably heading towards Miami because they speak Spanish, into the Orlando area, Kissimmee area.
Okay.
So it is very sad. But our government projection let me see here. Our government projection obtained by the New York Times shows there could be more than 35,000 illegal children to be taken care of by June. Can you imagine 35,000 children? That's a lot of children that they're taking away from their parent. And instead of deporting the whole family back together with their belongings, they're separating. And, you know, they complain and cry. So I'm like, oh, Trump is separating. This is insane. They're separating these poor children from their parents. And, of course, some of them don't have parents at all because they've been murdered, like I told you before. But if the American people really knew what was going on, they would be really enraged.
Well, there are a lot of reports telling folks what's going on. I think there's, you know, One American News. I think Newsmax is probably doing a somewhat decent job. I don't, you know, Fox has kind of lost their way. And, of course, the liberal networks are telling just the opposite. But I'm wondering if it's almost like too much of a good thing for what they thought was going to be a good thing, the left. In other words, they want to bring in illegals. They want illegals voting. But they brought in so many so quickly. The old saying that the left always overplays their hand. They always go to excess. They do too much. It's so bad that it's making them look bad, and people are going, what the hell are you bringing all these people in for? You know, because the kids, because of this Supreme Court decision, Plyler v. Doe, they're guaranteed an education at American taxpayer expense. Now, that's a bogus decision that should be overturned by Congress, but it hasn't been, okay? So we've got all these sanctuary cities that are thinking, hey, great, bring the illegals in. They'll vote. You know, we'll make them vote illegally, and we'll get more money. Well, you know, they may take up more money than the more money they think they're going to get from them. So there might be a negative consequence to having so many illegal aliens costing so much money that they can't vote themselves enough money because there isn't enough money to go around. So have we reached a point in the left where the left has decided that maybe they did this a little bit too much and they're going to have to actually adopt Trump policies without calling them Trump policies? You know, they're not talking about building the wall. They're talking about patching the gaps. Okay, they're not talking about you know closing down the or at least you know they're not talking about the separating of families anymore, or they're saying you know we're protecting kids from you know the coyotes, you know we're protecting kids from the human trafficking. So they're smart, they'll do Trump policies, which we know works, but they have to do it without calling them Trump policies. I don't give a damn what they call them as long as they adopt them because they worked. Is there any movement in that area?
Yeah, I don't. Somebody was saying that the Biden, they're like really in a bad crisis right now, that they're probably going to have to finish Trump's wall, even though they don't want to admit it. But they really need that wall, ASAP. They need to. And also, they're like I told you before, they're stealing the materials from us. The cartels are stealing all the steel. So it's very sad. But the agenda of the Democrat Party is Americans last is their agenda in this country. And I think a lot of the Democrats, like I have this black friend of mine, that she has become a friend of the store, actually, very nice customer. And she has opened her eyes, let me tell you. She was there last night. We had a blast showing her all kinds of videos and all that. And she's trying to convince people at work the corruption of the Democrats is that it's been going on for years and years and years, and it is time. The only thing I think is the children are going to unite our country because the horror that they're doing with our kids and kids from other countries, that's the agenda. They want to keep all the kids, and people don't have a clue what's going on. Let me tell you.
I think this is human trafficking that really upsets people the most. And I don't think they realize just how bad the human trafficking is, because the kids are being sent here. They call them unaccompanied minors. To me, that's child abandonment.
Exactly.
If you send your kid into a foreign country without their parents and they're minors and you just let them at the mercy of human traffickers, those parents, if they were in this country, they'd be arrested for child endangerment. You know, their kids would
be
taken away. You know, and so why are we even taking these kids? Why aren't we literally uniting them with their parents and say, look, you can't send your kids without you guys. You got to apply legally. You got to do this properly. That would make sense. That would be a good policy for them to do. You know, regarding the wall, that would be a good policy too. You know, they're not going to. But here's another good policy. They can build the wall and call it, you know, the access to border checkpoint wall or call it anything you want, because the purpose of, they need to redefine the wall. The wall is not there to keep people out. Well, it is. But the wall is there to direct people to legal border checkpoints. You can still get into the country. Mm-hmm. You just can't get in,
sure.
You know, except at a border checkpoint. So the reasons, the whole, but Trump didn't even do this, but he really should have, he did sometimes, but he really need to emphasize that the wall is there to direct people to a proper border checkpoint, to be inspected, to declare their citizenship or lack thereof, to come into the country legally or be kept out. That's what the wall is for. The wall facilitates the border checkpoints, and people miss that.
And you know, I've been talking to some of the conservative people, and people mm-hmm. said we need to go with our rifles and weapons to the border,
millions
of us, to protect our country like we protect our home at night. It's the same thing, because let me tell you, Greg,
mm-hmm.
not only little kids and little women are coming across, there's so many terrorists coming across. They're here already. They're coming across. And that's the agenda of Obama when he took office. He was bringing thousands and thousands of so-called Christian refugees from Syria. And it was not true. They were not all just kids and little women. No.
Or Somalia.
Thousands of terrorists are here.
Yeah.
And a lot of Somalians. Yeah, they're all from the Congo, from everywhere.
Yeah.
They're here already. And let me tell you, this is going to be a big problem for the United States, because the terror that they're going to put Americans through, they don't have a clue what's coming their way. They're here already. And thousands are flying to Venezuela. And from Venezuela, they're arriving to Honduras. And from Honduras, they come across right here.
Yeah.
And the other thing, Greg,
mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned before, over 30,000 Cubans are stuck waiting in Mexico because Obama deported them. Yeah. And there were political asylum in Cuba, but they sneak in instead of coming through the Mariel boat or through little boats. So you know how you catch them. And so they were deported by Obama, because he made a deal with Fidel Castro behind closed door.
Yeah.
That's what my pastor told me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But bringing up to present day, his last question, well, I got a couple more questions for you. We got our folks starting to call in for our next hour. We're going to talk about the Convention of States, the rally in Tallahassee, and that's April 15th, which is traditionally tax day. Which should be very interesting. We should also talk about April 19th. We need to watch for April 19th. That's the day that Mike Lindell is releasing his Frank speech. And there's a bunch of stuff coming out on the conservative side. But that's also the day that the left decided they want to have all their infrastructure bills passed, their social justice, their Green New Deal, and things like that. So there's a lot of really – and April 19th, people don't realize that's the day that Waco was invaded. That's the day that Hitler went into the Warsaw Ghetto and you know, assassinated, you know, the Jews in the ghetto. That's April 19th mm-hmm. is I think, is the day that Timothy McVeigh, you know, blew up the building. Well, there's a lot more to that story, too. But April 19th is one of those very symbolic days that things happen. It's the day that we started our war with Britain for our independence. You know, and so people forget, it's not just the Boston Marathon, folks, okay? So we need to, and we'll sort of put a caution out there, just be aware that stuff might be going on April 19th. And I don't know what's going to happen, but just knowing what I've seen from previous actions, the left is very much into symbolism. And so they would love to take our Patriots Day and turn it into their, you know, leftist revolution day. And so just want to be on guard about.
Is there mm-hmm. a rally going on, you said, in Tallahassee?
There is on the 15th. Yeah, I got my guests are starting to call in already, and so that's good. Actually, I want to check in with
15?
Yeah, you can stick around for if you have some time. You want to stick around for the next hour? I want to check in with my guest that called earlier, who's been muted for a while.
Okay.
Just get an opinion here real quickly. So my sure. listener,
hey, Greg.
How you doing? How you doing so far? You having fun?
It's actually Drew. We actually talked a while back ago.
Okay.
I'm the one that was talking about I go out there and find missing kids and all that. I had to change my number because the NSM there's a group out there right now, the one I talked to you guys about, that came in to tag me. April 16th is another day that you guys are going to want to watch out for.
Okay.
They even get it on their website. They talked about it on Blog Talk Radio, how they're going to take guns out to Phoenix, Arizona.
To the border?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, that's not quite on the border. Here's something that people need to know about, and Josie mentioned this a little bit earlier, this idea of getting your militias together and going down to the border. Your typical illegal alien is not a threat. Some are, those that end up being murderers and drunk drivers and things like that. The terrorists are the real threat. And those, you certainly want to be, if you're someone who carries a gun, please do, because that's a problem. But the way to remove illegal aliens from this country is not by force and roundup and, bringing in what the liberals will call the stormtroopers. Yeah. What you do, and we've got legislation for this, citizen legislation, you make it impossible for them to live here. Okay. The way you do that is civil asset forfeiture. Yeah. You overturn Plyler v. Doe, the Supreme Court decision that mandates we educate illegal alien kids. You stop educating illegal alien kids. You put your citizenship on your driver's license, okay? So every interaction you have where you have your government ID, it has your citizenship on it, meaning if you're not a citizen, you can't get a government ID, okay, which means you can't vote because you make voter ID mandatory. And as Josie has a bill with fingerprint ID. So this is how you do it. There are ways that we can do this. Everybody thinks you need the conflict and the arms and everybody's all set to take the guns out. No, there's so many, things we can do bureaucratically to make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. If you can't buy property, if you can't rent property, if you can't have a job, if you can't have a bank account, you can't have a credit card. If you take away all these things and say, this is for citizens, okay, if you're in the country illegally, you can't do any of these things. And we're going to be checking out the companies to make sure they're not violating these laws. Of course, some will. But make it as impossible, you make it as difficult as possible for illegal aliens to live here. Illegal aliens are not going to live here because there's no reason to. Cut off all the welfare. That's how you do it. But leave the guns at home. Save the guns for the terrorists and the criminals. Josie.
You have to have your guns. If you're going to go to the border, you have to bring your guns with you.
Well, yeah, for self-defense.
Because the cartels are going to murder you without guns. Oh, yeah. So
that's a different story.
Good. The stuff you were saying is good, but, there's so many illegals that they buy Social Security. They buy their way around. So it's very easy, and I personally know a few. So
Greg, what I was trying to mention was they were talking about shooting people. This NSM group, they're talking about hurting people
because they couldn't get a thing to march.
You can actually go look them up right out here on Blog Talk.
Okay, wait a minute. It's called NSM?
Yeah, National Socialist Movement.
Okay. Yep. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to put you on hold. Because I got to do something else here, and I got some special guests that I invited, so I'm gonna put you on hold. Josie, you can hang on and mute yourself if you want. I've got a couple more folks coming. I'm gonna play something real quick, and I'll be right back with our Convention of States folks. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That
is Action Radio.
We have so much fun here. That's how it works. All right, I got a bunch of new folks, and let's introduce them to Action Radio. Let's start with Dennis here. I'm going to probably butcher your last name, so you can help me out here. We'll be like, what's my line? Enter and sign in, please. Dennis Darag. Was it even close?
Yes, it's Dara. You did pretty good. It sounds
Dara.
Like
there we
D-A-R-A.
Go. Okay, and what's your position with the Convention of States?
Yeah, well, I'm the state director for Florida Convention of States Movement, and I really
okay.
appreciate you allowing us to be here today and talk about our rally coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, we got a little bit of wind noise there, so I don't know if you're driving right now, but I hate to say close the windows, but it's just getting a little breezy there, so just be aware of that. Let's get to Brenda on the line here. Brenda Carlin. Let me just try to get this going right here. Make her line live. Brenda, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. And what's your position with the Convention of the States?
I am the state grassroots coordinator for Florida Convention of States.
Excellent. And let me bring on Nancy Suits, the person that put all of you in contact with me, and get her involved as well. Nancy, good morning.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
All right. And your position?
I am helping with the Florida Communications and the comms, directing different various aspects of communicating our message out.
Okay. All right, so here's what I want to do. I'm basically going to let you folks talk a whole lot, and I can sit back here and listen. But I will have my pithy, witty questions guaranteed to tantalize your brains. But let's talk about, just give me some background. What your organization is, what is a convention of states, and so folks that aren't familiar with this, I'll just start with Dennis and then Brenda and then Nancy. We'll just kind of go in that order, and then everybody gets a chance to speak. And if you guys want to talk to each other or make up different points, feel free to leap right in. It's pretty much a free-for-all here. So if you want to start, Dennis, and tell us your bit, how you guys came about. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. The Convention of States Action Movement is all about an Article 5 convention. Article 5 is the article in the Constitution that gives the Congress the right to amend the Constitution. But our founders also gave we the people the right to amend the Constitution. It's never happened in our history, and there has been 400 applications, and a couple of them almost made it. One actually made it to 33, and they couldn't pull in that last state for 34, which is the two-thirds majority that we need to call a convention of states.
When was that?
We have to have 34 states agree on the same reasons to have the convention. There's been lots of attempts, but it's never been pulled off. We do have 15 states already signed up. We have active legislation going on in 22 states across the country, and mm-hmm. every state in the country has addressed this in their legislature one way or another. So that's what we're doing. We're a grassroots organization. We're building the largest army of engaged self-governing citizens since 1776, and we mm-hmm. intend to save this country.
Okay. What's a self-governing citizen?
A self-governing citizen is what our founders envisioned us all to be. Okay. Those are people that are active in the government. Just talking about it doesn't mean you're active. You need to get up and do something. Our mm-hmm. framers put the wording in Article 5 so that we, the people, could have a say in the government. And basically it was because of their fear of man's greed and the history of man with tyranny. So they put this Article 5 in the Constitution because they knew the Constitution would need to be amended. And they also knew that there needed to be a check and balance that the people could put mm-hmm. on the government. And that's what Article 5 is.
Okay. Let's get Brenda in the conversation. Brenda, do you want to add to this?
Yes. Well, I think you did a very good job of explaining it, what is transpiring. Convening the Convention of the States is one of our goals. Our
okay.
overriding mission is to inform and educate our fellow citizenry about their roles and just exactly what you asked about. What does it mean to be a self-governing citizen?
Mm-hmm.
you know, living free under our Constitution, liberty, we have to work at it. And so that's one of our main primary missions, is to grow the grassroots, grow the education and understanding of what it means to participate, activate, be engaged in our government, as according to our Constitution, rather than waiting for government to tell us, you know, how we're to live and things like that.
Okay. Nancy? Come join our conversation.
Okay, I was on mute. To follow up.
Yeah, feel free to unmute. I want you here in the conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So to follow up your question on what is a self-governing citizen, I think it's taking the next step above voting. So that may be getting engaged in your local city council, community council, zoning, school council. So this is where our power is, and it also lies in our state reps. So that's what I would add.
Okay, yeah. And you guys, if you don't have a comment, that's fine too. Or if you have an extended one, just let me know so that we can, you know, whoever has the most information to share, please feel free. The question I have, actually, I'm going to tell you a little bit later in the hour what we do here as citizen legislators, because I think you're going to find it really interesting. But let's get the information out on the rally in Tally, and then I want to find out more about you guys. So let's talk about that, contact information, where, when, what to do, how do people, if they have to register. Let's get the details on what's going on the 15th. Who wants to take that?
I'd like to let Brenda take that. She's got been the spearhead of our rally in Tally. Go ahead, Brenda.
The rally in Tallahassee will start at 10:30. We'll gather at the Vietnam Memorial, which is across from the Capitol. We will have a moment of silence and lay a wreath. We will proceed to walk the short distance to the World War II Memorial and do the same. And then we will return to the Capitol steps, the old Capitol steps, for a short program. And the purpose of our rally is to not only honor our veterans this particular year, but we would also like to make a position statement by our presence that we believe our Capitol should be open. Many people don't realize that our Capitol has been closed, even though our state has been open relative to
our borders,
the pandemic,
open.
The virus.
Our state board, our southern border is completely open and our Capitol is completely closed. Does anybody see the irony in that?
I think we all see the irony in that.
Definitely.
The time... it will, like I said, we'll gather at 10:30, and our however long it takes us to walk, it won't take that long to walk. But you are asking how do people sign up. We don't require registration, but you can go to conventionofstates.com/Florida and get the information there. You can just appear. You can just show up and join us if you'd like at the Vietnam Memorial. We will have additional information, a table with information that people, if they're interested in learning more about us, would like to join our Florida team. We welcome that.
Okay. I'm kind of curious about the veteran connection. I mean, I definitely believe in honoring the veterans. I mean, I have, you know, nothing but respect for our veterans and for our folks that are actively serving. Sometimes I think, though, and this is a little bit off topic, but I'm still kind of curious, that the fight for freedom, I think people feel that if they're not serving in the military or they're not doing something, you know, of that level, that they're not really serving freedom, that there's nothing they can do. They're sort of, you know, out there independent. You know, they're just the one voice. They can write letters. They can vote. They can, as we said before, that's about it. How do you sort of cross that bridge with people that aren't veterans that maybe feel left out somehow of the process, saying, gee, I didn't serve, or I could have, or you know, or chose not to for whatever reason. But how do we honor the veterans and then also honor the people that we want to bring in, you know, to your organization? See what I'm getting at?
Well, we honor everybody. The veterans are the most important piece in the puzzle for our whole liberty. They've been standing for our liberty for the whole history of our government. Relating to people being active that aren't in the military, as, just to echo what Nancy said before, this is really the next step beyond voting. Voting is the ultimate expression of an active citizen. But stepping up to be in government is what our founders really envisioned our people to be, self-governing mm-hmm. citizens. And it starts at the local level. You can't make a change without having the grassroots with you. So people stepping up for the county commissions, school boards, and that stuff is a perfect way for them to start to get involved in government and understand how it works, and then moving forward to represent their districts in the state house or the federal house. You know, that's okay. just the way it goes. But that's what people can do, and we have the movement and the facility for people to step up right now.
Okay. Anybody else want in? I got a sort of follow-up question. Brenda, Nancy?
Well, one of the questions that we pose as far as Convention of States is who decides? And mm-hmm. so is it relevant that who do you think can best decide for you what happens in your life? Is it going to be your mayor, your county commissioner? Are you going to have more influence with them versus even our, you know, state legislature or our federal government? We believe the government closest to the people is where it needs to be. And so as far as the connection, you know, with the military and citizens, it's not either or, it's both. We both play a role in preserving our liberty, and we have a responsibility as citizens to understand our responsibility, our history, our constitution, and what it means to be self-governing, and it starts, like they were both saying, locally.
Okay. So I want to kind of sort of clarify things for myself and maybe some other folks that are curious, because if you're talking about we the people and individual, you know, citizen, I forget what we call it, self-governing citizens, but this is a state convention, in fact, right? Because you need an Article 5 convention is a convention of the states. And so I want to make the connection, and the Convention of States want to propose amendments to the Constitution, which regulates these, or at least it's supposed to regulate the federal government by putting them in a nice little narrow box so that they don't exceed their powers. They are delegated certain powers by the states which wrote the Constitution, you know, to basically charter the federal government, but yet they delegated to the federal government powers that are not delegated to the states because the states were screwing them up, like interstate commerce, you know, boundaries, standards, weights, measures, you know, harbor fees, all the things that the states were screwing up. They gave that to the federal government so that the states wouldn't be, you know, disastrously competitive. So help me out here, understand that where we the people have action, where the states have action, and then we'll get into the issues that you actually want to bring to the Constitution. So, like I say, we the people versus the states, you know, is we the people acting through the states? How does this all work?
Yes, you're exactly right with that, Greg. This is okay. We the people acting through the states. Calling a convention of states is bringing the legislatures together to discuss making amendments to the Constitution. And that's where we're at, trying to bring the convention to fruition so that we do have the platform. And it is we the people working through the states. And that's mm-hmm. why we're like Florida is a past state. We were the third state of the 15 to pass the resolution. So our mission here is to keep educating the legislature, to stay involved with the legislature and let them know the support for the Convention of States, and also to have that communication channel open and clear so that we can be involved in what goes on, because it is up to the state legislatures. It's up to mm-hmm. we, the people, to get all the state legislators together to make the convention happen. But when okay. the convention happens, the state legislatures are in charge. So that's why we, the people, have to stay active and connected with the state legislatures.
Okay. If anybody has a question and wants to call in, feel free, 215-383-3832. You notice I don't take a lot of breaks, so we get a lot of time to really discuss these issues. I've got about three articles at the bottom of my computer about why a convention of states is different than a constitutional convention. And I know you get this question all the time. So who wants to kind of explain that to people in very specific terms?
Well, I can give you my thoughts on that. The Constitutional Convention is only the one and only Constitutional Convention. This is a convention of states under Article 5. Okay, mm-hmm. So there's a big difference, but the states will follow the heritage of conventions in the United States, which we have a rich heritage of conventions, and there are parameters that they will follow. There's a simulation on our website where people can watch a simulation of what a convention of states would look like. And there's a major difference between them between the Constitutional Convention and the Convention of States, because the Constitutional Convention was called to create the Constitution, and specific states were given specific duties in the Constitutional Convention to address certain things. So the Article 5 Convention is a whole different animal by itself. This is a convention of states just to propose amendments to the Constitution. And the biggest objection we've got answers for. So,
okay. Brenda, Nancy, you want to get in on this?
Well, again, I think he's stated it very clearly, and that the provision in Article 5, there's two ways to amend the Constitution. And the difference between, the Convention of the States and a Constitutional Convention, as Dennis said, we're not trying to rewrite or create a brand new Constitution. The purpose is to just exercise, according to Article 5 of our Constitution, a way to propose amendments to the Constitution. Okay. And
so
that's what we're doing.
So here's the question, though. Are you going to have these amendments written out before the convention? Are you going to write them during the convention? And how do you limit well, let's go the first thing. How are you going to do the amendments? We'll talk about the actual ones you're talking about.
Well, Convention of States doesn't write the amendments. The three areas that we have proposed for our that are in our resolution are term limits on Congress and the bureaucracy behind them, limiting the federal overreach of government, and imposing the fiscal restraints on the federal government. Those are
I want to get
to
each of those
categories.
Three, too. I definitely want to get to each of those three, but I want to find out first how the amendments are going to be written, because what I'm trying to establish is that unless the amendments are written ahead of time and people know what they're going to be discussing, or if you're going to be amending the amendments in the convention, what's the limitation? I want to find out where specifically this ends. Does it end before you go in saying, we're only going to take these five amendments, that's it, nothing else, or six, or however many you do, all right? Or is it much more of an open convention of states where you're going to have different amendments can be proposed and amended during the convention itself?
The
it's
states
a limited
do
that
convention.
At, yes. Go ahead, Brendan.
Yeah, Brendan, then we'll take Dennis.
The states at the meeting of the states, the convention of states, they propose the amendments and will ultimately decide what amendment would be put forth that will then go back to the state legislatures to see if they agree on it and will ratify it. So they will be the ones to decide. And where it ends is with ratification, if we have 38 states decide on the amendment that comes out of the meeting of the states to ratify it. And it's limited to the three areas that are in the resolution.
Okay. All right. So I'm just reading the Article 5.
Like
yeah, go ahead, Jess.
I'd just like to add to that a little bit. I think it clarifies for you that the state legislatures will be the ones that decide actually what the discussion at the convention is. The convention will be limited to those three scopes of information: term limits, fiscal restraint, and ending federal overreach. But the actual amendments to be proposed will come from the state legislatures through the delegates that are at the convention. And the delegates will be bound by the state legislature's desire. And that's a federal law. So, and it will be limited. There, you cannot go off on a tangent and start creating crazy amendments. And people may try to use the same way Congress has made a mess of a lot of things with using the Interstate Commerce Clause and the Best Welfare Clause and that. But all these amendments can only be proposed at the convention, and they're not, they won't become an amendment until they're sent back and be ratified by 38 states.
Okay. So just one thing, and then I want to get into specific areas. You mentioned, let me see, I guess how the amendments are going to be I think I've sort of lost my question here. I got too many things in my head right now. But it just, I'm just worried about the safeguards of the actual language as to where, you know, because I don't see. Well, I know what I was going to ask you. I'm sorry. You mentioned that there was a federal law that governs the convention of states. Which law is that? Because I want to check it out.
I believe I would have to look that statute up for you and stuff. But believe it's embodied in the Constitution that they're bound by the state legislatures. And that's why we need to stay active with the legislatures in all the states so that we can be part of the process. And that goes along with that self-governing citizen culture that you're in contact with the legislature and letting your desires known to them so that we can bring the amendments that the people want to the convention.
Yeah. I think you'll find a lot more support for this if you really state upfront, because I'm reading Article 5 right now. The Congress, you know, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, that's you guys, that's what you're talking about, convention of states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states or by conventions in 3/4 thereof as the one or other, you know, mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. So my question, this is why I'm a little concerned. I don't see a specific prohibition against going beyond what the convention starts with. That's my concern. So if you guys state that upright, that nothing shall be considered, but it's not in the Constitution, not in Article 5, not that I see, unless I'm missing a clause. So that's one of my concerns with this, is that once it starts, you know, despite all your best efforts, that things may get a little crazy. You may have to shut down some things. Say, look, we didn't consider that. That's beyond the scope of this convention. We're not going to go into that area. Right, you know, are you guys prepared to do that?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dennis. Oh, okay.
Well,
what it is we've read in the Federalist Papers, I believe, Article 5 was discussed through the years by our founders up and down, and I will try to find that particular talk about that, but it all revolves around the fact that in order for the convention to be called, 2/3 of the states have to agree on the reasons for that, and the reasons for that are limited, so therefore the convention itself will be limited, and that will be up to the state legislatures that are in charge of the convention to control that.
Okay. Let's go into the three areas you talked about. The first one is impose. Oh, Brenda, did you have a comment on that? I just want to follow up. I'm sorry. I think I'm going to cut you off there.
No, I just wanted to add that the state legislatures and the states will – it's in the resolution of each state that each state's legislature, each house, you know, the House and the Senate of each legislature had to vote on and agree to. And that includes – they will decide the rules for the delegates. And – but one of the things that is – you know, each state gets one vote at the convention of states. And the other thing is they have to be held to just that area of the resolution, that topic. And so now, you know, we can talk about each of the topics and, you know, go into that if you'd like.
Well, yeah, I want to do that, but I'm just saying it might be something to make clear to people exactly how the convention will be limited, just so that people go, okay, well, that's cool. Gee, I was worried. I don't want my Second Amendment to disappear. I'll tell you exactly. That's what people are thinking. Well, they might redo the First Amendment. They might redo the Second Amendment. Where, you know, where's our Bill of Rights going to go? That's what people are concerned about. That's why I want to make sure that we got that clarified.
Well, they're limited by the resolution itself and the statutes that the state legislatures have agreed to. But oftentimes what we say is, okay, so let's go with this. And let's say that we have somebody, you know, that goes rogue or tries to do this. Well, when you consider it takes 34 states that have already agreed to contain and limit themselves to these three categories, they have the role, and it's in part of the process that they pull those people back and do not will not permit them to stray, because it's contrary to what they all have agreed to. Even let's say if we took it to the furthest extent that something came out of there that was an amendment to the Constitution that was considered, you know, just off the wall. You would have four other states, you know, that would have to buy into that, and it would only take one half of one legislature to kill it. So the chances of something coming out of a convention of the states, given the fact that it would not even involve doing away with other amendments, it's to propose amendments to the Constitution, the checks and balances that are built into it, it is a very, very difficult process. And I would also point out that if you look at what's happening right now, do you think we have checks and balances occurring right now?
Well, we have I think we have a great constitution. I just don't think we have the will to actually enforce it. If it were enforced, our budget would be Article 1, Section 8, and it would be about $1.5 trillion a year. I know, because I did a project on that and actually documented, you know, by department, by agency, how much it would cost to run it based on the clauses and sections of, the clauses of Article 1, Section 8. So I'm sure of that. So let's talk about the first one. Impose fiscal restraints on the federal government. What you got in mind? Who wants that one? And Nancy, we haven't heard from you for a bit, so feel free to hop in here. Fiscal restraints, what are we talking about? Who wants this one?
Well, I'll take it that fiscal restraints is a nice way of saying, please balance the budget. They're definitely out of control with the fiscally in Washington, D.C. One of my biggest complaints about Donald Trump in office was signing the gigantic budgets. This is something that they just can't continue to do. It's just out of control. So fiscal restraints basically means balance the budget, but it also means getting it together with what they're doing with the money. And this opens the door for us to discuss how the federal government is spending our money. And these are, again, questions that the legislatures can bring up in different modes and stuff like that. But we definitely want Washington, D.C. to start controlling themselves. That's one of my biggest drives of coming in here, is that I don't want my grandchildren to be burdened by this gigantic debt. And I don't believe the people that say, don't worry about it, we can work it out, it's all a matter of bookkeeping and stuff. That's just not true. There's going to be a point where it comes, where the hammer comes down, and somebody's going to have to, you know, pay up. And I don't want it to be my grandchildren any worse than it is now.
Yeah. Here's my question, though. A balanced budget amendment would basically equalize the revenue coming in with the spending going out, okay? But that doesn't touch the national debt. So are you going to compel a certain amount of spending for debt reduction in balancing the budget? Because the budget is the deficit. That's the yearly difference between how much is spent versus how much is taken in. The yearly deficit adds to the national debt. The national debt's like $27-28 trillion right now. The yearly deficit's about $1-2 trillion, probably like $5 trillion this year, which is going to be insane. But the question is, how do you, are you going to build a national debt component into paying down the national debt as you're balancing the budget? And what's the timeline on that?
That's a great question and idea, Greg, and that's the kind of thing that needs to be discussed at the convention, and those decisions aren't made before the convention. That's what the convention is for, is to bring up those particular points like that and let the states weigh in on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Brenda?
Yes, that's correct. He took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, whoever speaks first usually does it. That's this kind of thing. Nancy, do you want to get on this? We haven't heard from you for a bit.
I think you all are on track. So fiscal restraints, I think also, you know, moving forward, we cannot continue to have $2 trillion spending sprees. So I think that would be part of fiscal restraint.
Okay. So if you want to do this, now let me tell you a little bit about what I do here. So Action Radio is the world's first and only show that actually writes citizen legislation as a regular part of what we do. My most recent bill gives full product liability back to vaccine manufacturers. Okay, I've written another one which amends Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which provides a wall of separation between providers of internet interactive computer services, you know, social media and search engines, and the users. That's us. Okay, so I get very specifically into this. So if I'm asking you more detailed questions than you make on a lot of other shows, it's simply because I do this every day. So this is my thing, right? So this is why I am so interested in the nuts and bolts details. So for me, I'm thinking if I'm you know, part of your group, or I'm you know, suggesting ideas, I would go a lot further. I would be much more specific, and I would say there will be no budget deficit. You know, deficits are outlawed. I would say that Congress, you know, here's another one of my personal amendments I want to propose. Congress may not borrow any funds in any form so long as there's any national debt, which means borrowing stops now, all of it. Okay, and until that national debt is zero, they can't borrow a single dollar. The only exception I would have is a declared war, not an emergency, because the first thing they'll do is declare an emergency. Oh, God, we've got COVID. It's an emergency. Let's spend $5 trillion. That's nonsense. But if you really want to restrain Congress, I mean, you really want to restrain them, you've got to put something ironclad in there that says deficits are outlawed. Okay, there will be no deficits, just like the states. Most states, I don't know any state that can spend more than they take in, all right? So if it's good enough for the states, why isn't it good enough for the federal government? I don't understand why the states way back when didn't say, you know, we're going to have the same fiscal strain on the federal government that we have. They can't borrow money, okay? The only time I would think of, like I say, is a declared war. How's that for a little stronger language?
Well, if you're, I love the language myself personally, but what I would say is that, yes, all of that kind of language would be part of the meeting of the states. And if you're a delegate or a state legislature, you know, you could make that statement and make your position clear. And
I
that's
just did.
What the states are. Right. But
take
that's
the
what
podcast
you're,
with
you're,
you.
Yes, you're. That's what you're. That's what it would be like. Exactly, it would be people, you know, who are representing us through our state legislature, which could be you if you were a legislator or a delegate, proposing those kinds of things. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, so this is why I'm doing this right now. So I am proposing them to you, and I'm hoping that you guys hopefully will take some of these and go, that's an interesting idea. Let's talk about that. Maybe you'll turn that into a more concrete proposal. I think that'll actually get you more attention, because the proposals you have now are very general, unless you want them general specifically for the purpose of you know, creating the amendments actually in the convention. Me personally, I'd rather have more specifics going in, just because the more you leave open, I think the more things will stray from what you want to do. Here's another question for you. There's two sides to spending. There's two sides to a budget. There's the revenue coming in and the spending going out. If we limit the spending going out, saying you can't borrow anything, money coming in. You can't spend, you know, more than you take in, and you can't borrow a single dollar until the national debt is gone. That's going to be a radical change in budgeting. But how about the other end of it, the 16th Amendment? 16th Amendment said that Congress can go into everybody's personal income and take their income away. It used to be the states paid the federal government a portion by the citizenry, which was determined by the census. Would you be in favor of repealing the 16th Amendment? getting rid of the income tax. The power of Congress to tax incomes individually.
You've got some really yes. valid points there, Greg, and we definitely.
I told you I do this every day.
Some of those. Some of those points are definitely what should be discussed at the convention. At this
okay.
point right now, we don't have the convention. That's what our movement is all about, is trying to get to the convention. So we
okay.
need to focus on the process of bringing the convention to fruition. At the same time, that is the duty of a self-governing citizen. Exactly what you're saying is to relate those terms to the state legislature. Now, you're in
okay.
Florida, so joining with us to make a relationship with the state legislature so that when it comes time to have the convention that we can get them to speak about the amendments we want, that's the time for that. Right now, the time is for us to get 19 more states to agree to allow us to have the convention, because everything else will be a moot point unless we have the convention.
Okay. Let's move on to number two. Anybody else have a comment on any fiscal restraints? Have I missed any? I don't think so. I got taxes. I got the national debt. Got the deficit. Got revenue. Got borrowing.
Well, there's a fiduciary responsibility there, right? Similar, like we can't run our homes the way the government's running right now. So it's not just a balanced budget. It's, you know, spending and spending wisely, you know, and, you know, looking at not taking in more, not spending more than what we take in, all of those kind of, you want to even take it as far as, you know, general accounting principles, we might go
okay.
there. You never know.
How about requiring that no money be spent outside Article 1, Section 8, which are the delegated powers of Congress to spend money? How's that for limitation?
Yeah, I mean, those are all relevant. And like Dennis said, we have to get to the meeting of the states first, convention
okay.
of the states first, and those are all on the table.
All right. Well, let me give you the ideas that I think of as we talk about this. Actually, I wrote a few down before the show because hopefully I can inspire you to, like I say, you know, include these in. So impose fiscal restraints. You know, here are some, you know, ideas that would impose fiscal restraints. I would also go on the monetary end, too. I would end the printing of money. Unless it's backed by gold or some kind of a standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but just the rampant printing of money for quantitative easing is what's going to cause massive inflation. And this nonsense that the Federal Reserve say I would abolish the Federal Reserve too. I would require that all money be U.S. dollars. That'd be another thing I would add to this. Okay, you can't have some arbitrary private banking system, you know, messing around with our money, creating inflation to systematically steal, you know, our national worth and give it to private investors. That's one of our biggest problems too. So there's a lot of things tied into this, and that's just that one area. You know, so there are many things. You guys can come back as often as you want. I'm happy to talk about this, you know, all we can. We only have about 17 minutes left. Let's get to limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, number two. What do y'all want to do with that?
Well, that's just addressing how the government has overreached its responsibility through the years. They've used
okay.
the interstate commerce law to hold states hostage, really, by not funding them unless they do what the federal government wants. They've used the general welfare clause to make regulations and laws for almost everything that affects our life. Those are the kind of things that definitely need to be discussed at the convention, you know. And again, as self-governing citizens, it's our duty and our right to bring these issues up. And that's why we want to have the Convention of States. And it's imperative that we stay in contact with our legislatures about these issues. Because
mm-hmm.
just talking about them out here in public is wonderful to open the discussion, but we have to make that connection with the legislatures to make sure that they discuss what we would like them to discuss at the convention.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there's some things that actually can be done in the legislatures. You know, I would start working on, you know, repealing the I think it's the 16th Amendment, the income tax. I would immediately start, you know, getting some things going. So by the time you get to the convention, you know, there may be less to do. Just a thought. When I think of limiting the jurisdiction of the federal government is limited by the Constitution. So if it's already limited by the Constitution, what amendments would you be thinking of to limit the government further? What amendments would you want to propose to limit the power of the federal government that isn't already in there already in the Constitution already?
Well, that's an open book. And I'd like to hear what other people would like to propose to limit the federal government. I would like to see that, personally, would like to see them stop using the Commerce Clause to hold states hostage with the funding. I don't believe that a lot of the regulations that the federal government has put in place are within the jurisdiction of the federal government. I'd like to see all that examined. And again, okay. These are all the points that we need to bring up at the convention. That's why we do need the convention. And that's where we're at now, is trying to get there.
No, I understand that. But I got you for 15 more minutes. I want to make sure I get all these questions, because I think it's fascinating. I'm really curious to see where this goes. So don't take offense if I ask you tough questions. I do it to everybody. It's just
Greg,
Brenda, did you want to say something, Brenda or Nancy?
Greg, this is Nancy. Yeah, so the whole book was written, just to bring it to light here, is The Liberty Amendments by Mark Levin, where he actually goes into, you know, writing what these amendments might look like, what they could say, you know, specific wording. So I'd recommend...
Do you have some wording for me on some of his amendments?
I'm not at the moment. It's, you know, there's a whole book written, and it's a great book, but it does delve into the three subject matters.
Okay. Brenda?
Just to kind of bring it all together again, everything that you've mentioned is a topic that could be out there for the state legislatures. The people who attend a meeting of the state's convention of the states could talk about and propose.
Okay.
With convention of states, what we're trying to accomplish, like Dennis said, is we don't actually propose the specific amendment. What we put in our resolution is the three areas that we would like to see our state legislatures address in a meeting of the states under Article 5. And so those three areas are, you know, the fiscal restraints. It could mean everything that you've just said. It could be even more strict, or it could be what they decide that would be. Same with limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Each of us has a wish list, you know, a wish list potentially, you know, just write down everything that you want to have, you know, and you could talk about this with your state legislature. You could share your what you would like to see have happen. And then when we hold the meeting of the states, you would like to see that they actually do that. It would involve, you know, persuading others and things like that to come to your position. Convention of States as a grassroots movement doesn't dictate and doesn't state what the actual proposed constitution amendment would be. That's up to the state legislatures. But we do propose the three areas that we want to address. And so that's why we keep coming back around to that, as opposed to stating, you know, well, we'd like this or that to happen. Not that we wouldn't like this or that to happen.
No, that makes sense. Well, tell me what's going on around the country then, because we got a Florida state convention states. I imagine there are other states. Who are the most active state, you know, organizations within the convention of states, and what are they doing?
Oh, my goodness. Dennis, go ahead. Do you want to say? I'm sorry, I didn't want to jump over you.
Well, you guys can both talk. I guess fine.
There you go.
We're not separate. We're not. Go ahead, Dennis. Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
We are part of Convention of States, the National Convention of States. Florida is one of the 15 past states. We have lots of legislation going on in all the different states. At this particular time, we potentially could have up to 2 to 4 additional states that may come on this year. What we're striving to do is have 34 states who pass it, our resolution, in their state legislatures.
Okay.
And how people can help us, regardless of what state they're in, is to go to conventionofstates.com and join their respective state team and assist us with talking with their respective legislators to pass our resolution.
Do you have any luck with Florida? Have you talked to a specific legislator? Let me start again. Legislators. I talk too fast when I get excited. That are interested in this? I mean, where's the support in Florida, for example?
Well, as Dennis mentioned, we have passed the resolution in Florida. We were the third state out of the 15 to pass it. But, you know, unlike Congress, we have term limits in Florida. And so our legislators turn over. And so we are constantly reinforcing our relationship and educating our legislators about Convention of States. And also, like I mentioned at the beginning, getting our fellow citizens in Florida to understand what it is so that we can grow our grassroots. There is numbers, you know, politicians listen to numbers and they need to hear our grassroots. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing the rally is to be in Tallahassee to the Capitol to let them know that we are an engaged grassroots team and organization. And we, the people, are here, you know, and we appreciate them and we need to be heard.
Okay. You got some media coming. Who's showing up? Have you invited a bunch of folks, national media? Who's going to be there?
We have invited the media.
Nancy,
whether they show or not is a good question.
Well, that's always the case.
But we have put out the invitation to everybody. And I would just like to add to what Brenda was saying, and you had asked about the active states. Florida was the third state to pass the amendment, and we do have over 157,000 supporters in the state of Florida, and that's
very cool.
Part of the 5 million supporters nationwide. So you can see just mathematically that Florida is an extremely active state. And we do have almost 50% of our 120 House districts covered by a district captain. And we're generally run with 100% activity from our district captains, meaning that they're constantly active on our platform every week. So our state is one of the most active. And we do have other states in the union that are up at the top of the list of being active, and some of them are not past states. So we do have activity across the country, and we are one of the shining stars in the country, I believe.
Yeah.
The state
Do you work with the 10th Amendment Center at all, or any of the folks that are working to get more of 10th Amendment enforcement and the areas that the federal government's not supposed to be involved with are actually, you know, taken back to the states? Do you guys talk to each other? I'm just curious.
Can you say that question again?
Oh, 10th Amendment Center, the folks that are helping to limit the powers of the federal government by saying, hey, 10th Amendment says if it's not delegated to you, you can't do it. It belongs to the states or the people.
And if I understand the question,
what do you work with? 10th Amendment Center. Yeah, it's just real simple. I was just curious.
When you say we're go ahead. Welcome working with any group that would like to that shares our platform and would like to participate with us in growing the grassroots and holding a meeting of the states. Directly, I'm not aware that we're aligned or working with in the sense that you might be talking about the 10th Amendment Center.
Okay, I was just curious. So, yeah, go ahead. Dennis, did you want to add something? I thought there was someone there. Brenda, Nancy? Okay. Do you have any questions for me?
Nancy, did you want to say something? No, I want to thank you, myself. I want to thank you for giving us this time to talk about Convention of States. And we invite anyone who would like to know more about Convention of States to visit, you know, conventionofstates.com or to come to Tallahassee on Thursday at 10:30, meet us at the Vietnam Memorial, and learn more about us, meet us. And you don't have to necessarily believe what we're talking about. You're certainly, you know, encouraged to go read resources yourself, original sources, and make your own decision. But we, you know, a lot of us have started as people who talked a lot, called into radio talk, put things on Facebook, and basically complained a lot. And Convention of States is a way to actually do something according to the Constitution to make real change happen and limit the overreach of our federal government. So we hope that you'll join us, and thank you so much for the time that you've given us today.
My pleasure. Yeah, we got a couple of minutes left, but if you guys have to take off, I understand. It's been lots of fun. If you have just a couple more minutes, limit the terms of office for its officials. Number three is the big issue. Term limits, I think, is huge for you guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, limiting terms for limits for the government is a basis that really is needed in Washington, D.C., and I think that's one of the things that will definitely change the face of Washington, D.C. I don't think our founders envisioned having an elite class rule this country the way it looks right now. The whole idea of this country, the grand experiment of self-governance, was to have citizen activity in the government, which we really don't have nowadays, okay? So that's what this is all about, is bringing back the culture of self-government to the whole country. And it requires activists to be active, not just talking about it. You need to be active. You need to get involved and get out there. And our rally here in Tallahassee is an excellent example and a way for people to come out and be heard. We have all the proper permissions to be there on Thursday, and we already have a pretty big group coming from what our understanding is, which I think it's going to be an epic event. And if you get a chance, come on out and listen to us and honor the veterans with us on Thursday.
That sounds wonderful. Can you tell me some of the speakers? Who's going to be there? Who might I know?
We're going to have our Veterans Coalition Director is our main speaker in the beginning. He will be addressing the veterans and also why we're there. I'll be speaking a little bit on the Convention of States. We also have one representative, Solid, coming out to speak with us on his support for the Convention of States and whatever else he's working on there. We also have someone singing the Star Spangled Banner for us, and we're open to discussion and answering questions when we're there also.
Can anybody get up and speak, or is it just to express their opinion, or are you going to be limiting it to
speakers? Probably won't be an open deal like that where someone can get up and speak completely, but all the leaders will be there, and once the speakers are concluded and we're done with that process there, we'll be there to answer questions personally with anybody that wants to be, or collect petition signatures if people show up that haven't signed a petition yet. And getting petition signatures in Florida is still really important because our system generates letters to your local representative that you support the Convention of States. So it's really important for us to continue to get more and more people here in the state of Florida to sign the petition. So we'll also be attempting to do that at the rally in Tally.
Okay. I like that, in the rally in Tally. That's kind of cool. Just like I said, we've got about 2 minutes left here. Election reform, one of the biggest problems we have. I mean, I'll be blunt. Trump won the election. What happened was an absolute travesty. There's some amazing things going on in Arizona with their audit of Maricopa County. The Georgia Secretary of State actually filed a lawsuit against an audit, making him look guilty as hell. Just as a general area, is that something, because this is fairly new this year, and I know that a lot of the other issues you have, like the budget, you know, reigning in federal power, things like that, have been around for quite a while. Have you had a chance to take a look, or would you consider adding election integrity reform, you know, as an area that might be worth looking at, given what happened last year?
Well, yes, election integrity is extremely important, and we've been involved in that already. As a state, we have stood up and tried to help other states view their election laws and stuff like that, which is definitely something that would come into the federal overreach category of discussion at the convention. And I personally believe that voting restrictions and stuff is a state issue. That is not a power that's enumerated to the federal government in the Constitution. So it's up to each state to clean up their election laws and everything, and I don't believe personally that we need a federal mandates on election laws. That particular power was left to the states, and they should pick up the bandwagon on that and fix it.
Okay. Listen, I think you've all done very well articulating the case for a convention of states. I look forward to following your progress. Have fun at the rally on the 15th, and if anybody wants to hear it again, listen to the podcast, because we've been through this several times. So I want to thank all of you. We've got Dennis, Dara, Brenda, Carlin, and Nancy Suits, and you guys have been great. We've got about 30 seconds left. And who wants the last 20 seconds?
Well, I'd just like to thank you for having us here, and just reiterate that we'll be in Tallahassee on Thursday at 10:30 in the morning at the Vietnam War Memorial. So if anybody's out there listening, come on out and join us.
Sounds good to me.
Stand up for liberty.
There you go. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. And you know me, I'm probably going to have more ideas for you, too. You might want to check out our website, too, writeyourlaws.com, and hopefully maybe something will inspire you guys as well. This has been fun. This is something I really wanted to talk about. I was really curious to see where it was, and so this has all been wonderful. Anyway, I got to go. We're out of time. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time.